Welcome to Mid-Century Modernism with Monique, your go-to podcast for all things architecture, design, and innovation within mid-century modernism. Join me on a journey through the golden age of design, where every episode brings you fresh inspiration for modern living and unlocks the secrets of this iconic and timeless style. What are we waiting for? Let's get started. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Mid-Century Modernism with Monique. I'm Monique Anton, your host, and I am here today with a very special Eichler owner, my friend Matt Johnson. How are you, Matt?
Monique, I'm doing very well. Thanks a lot for having me here. We're sitting in your dining room overlooking the South Bay, and I'm looking at all of these places and just imagining all of the technology and entrepreneurship stories that have come about through all this acreage here. And in some of that acreage, there's houses that you've bought and sold for people.
That's right. That's right. We're looking down on Stanford campus. We're looking at the Dish. And we can see all the way over there. Can you see through the little fog there, the city?
Yeah.
The city line.
Can just make out the city. I can see the South Bay, and I don't see any aggressive marine life from here, but I know it's swimming around there.
Yeah. And for those of you listening, you might be able to hear my little French bulldog, Walter. He's kind of growling because he wants some attention, but we're going to let him be for a little bit here. So, Matt, I want to get into the nitty-gritty of Eichlers. You have owned this Eichler. You've completely remodeled it. You worked with a great company, Keycon, who I've actually had on this podcast. What are the things that you have loved most about your Eichler?
Okay. Monique, I'll answer that question. And maybe for your audience, we can put my Eichler into perspective. So I'm living in Palo Alto, and I was lucky enough to purchase one of the few two-story Eichlers, original two-story Eichlers. And I bought mine in 2015. Mm-hmm. And from what I understand, I guess there are somewhere between 40 and 50 bona fide two-story Eichlers. So I was really lucky. And that's a good transition into answering directly your question. So the couple of things I guess I really appreciate most about the home are the basic lines, the basic design of this home. And I guess it was designed by a person named Claude Oakland, who was working for Eichler as an architect, an external architect. And I appreciate the lines so much and the way he must have conceptualized this space that I decided when I was doing the remodel to put virtually no art up or anything that would clutter this. I do believe that the architecture of the home, the design of the home, is the art itself. And so I didn't want to kind of besmirch that by having a bunch of wall hangings and everything else around. I didn't want to distract. So I appreciate that. I appreciate the fact that there are two stories. And so on the ground floor, that's kind of where this now open plan sort of area is, and then the bedrooms are upstairs. I also appreciate, and this is only something you could enjoy or have in the state of California or somewhere in a warm climate, this indoor-outdoor living concept where the home itself has a set of indoor square footage, but really you can use that outdoor space to kind of double the size of the livable space of the home. So those are right off the top of my head the things that I enjoy the most about the home.
And what have been the problems that you've had? A lot of people ask, you know, they say, we love the architecture, but what do we have to get into as new homeowners?
Yeah, the problems I would say are, first of all, radiant heating. The first day I moved in 2015, I flipped on the heat and there were leaks that manifested. In other words, the previous owner, who I really love, but you know, hadn't had the heat running for a while. I purchased the home in the summer, and so immediately I had to patch up holes. And I would think, since I bought the home, there have probably been a total of 15 to 20 points in that radiant heat system that needed to be patched up. Mm-hmm. So knock on wood, you know, I haven't had any problems in the last few years.
Yeah.
The other thing is that these homes were designed in the 60s and 70s, primarily most Eichlers. And at that time, the fashion of the day was to have small kitchens and small bathrooms. And so this is super congested, and it doesn't tie into how people really live inside of homes today. And so as part of this remodel, I opened all of that up. Other problems, I would say, Eichler homes do not lend themselves to be retrofitted with central air conditioning. There's really no room for ducting in the walls or ceilings. And mm-hmm. so this is not a big problem in the city of Palo Alto or in this kind of moderate Mediterranean climate. But I think anywhere else, or if things start to really heat up, I am hoping that there will be some sort of a HVAC system, an air conditioning system that will be a lot more modular or let's say a smaller form factor, something that will allow homeowners, Eichler homeowners, to add AC. So yeah, I think those would be my responses.
You mentioned that you had some time, you spent some time abroad, and you were in Europe, and you were fascinated by the architecture there. Can you share with us what it was about the Eichler style that you fell in love with?
Yes. And first off, for your listeners, when you said spent time abroad, that kind of sounds like, I don't want your listeners to think like I'm some arrogant elitist who spends time abroad doing a grand tour of Europe. Initially, I was stationed in Europe as an officer in the military for a couple of years, stationed in Germany, and I loved it so much that I had to figure out, like, how do I possibly get back over here as a civilian? Like, you can't kind of stay permanently assigned overseas in the military. And so I worked out a way to do that, and I returned to the U.S. to get a graduate degree, and then I spent another kind of 18 years over there. So I spent basically 20 years living in Europe, primarily in Germany, and also another 8 years in London. And so coming back to your question about like the Eichler thing, I think I was exposed to a few things during the time that I lived in Europe that really started to clue me into aesthetics. And I didn't care about aesthetics growing up at all. The first was in Germany, I became aware of the Bauhaus movement, which was started in the 1920s and was a collection of various crafts and artists and designers who all came together and wanted to kind of rethink life and design and how to live life and how to design things that made more sense in a modern world. And so this really appealed to me. And so a lot of Bauhaus architecture and the Bauhaus tradition, I started to read about that and get super interested in it. And then as part of my job, I was spending a lot of time in the Nordic region working on projects over those years. And I started to get exposed to Nordic minimalism. And, you know, in that climate, in that area, there's so little light generally that all of the structures are usually meant to kind of amplify the amount of light that comes indoors. And of course, the indoor designs tend to be very simplistic, very light colored, because, you know, most of the winters or for 6 months out of the year, you're spending in complete darkness. So those two things, those aesthetics really appealed to me. And so when I came back to the U.S. and eventually moved out to the Bay Area, I recall very clearly in kind of February of 2015, I was looking for a home to buy in Palo Alto. And I was with a girlfriend at the time, and we walked into this home, and I just started cracking up and laughing and saying, I love this. This is incredible. I've never seen anything like this. And she just shook her head almost dismissively and said, well, what are you talking about? It's an Eichler. And I said, it's a what?
And then I didn't know.
And then she
your first kinda, experience.
Yeah, and she kind of described this to me. And in this case, it was one of the homes on, I think, Roosevelt Circle.
Right, Fair Meadow, yeah.
In Palo Alto. And it was a really simple kind of maybe a 12 to 1,400 square foot home with this rectilinear kind of these spaces or cutouts. And I just thought, hey, this is perfect. There's not one extraneous piece of material or line here. And I love it. It looks modular and open. So that was kind of my first experience. And then I started more academically trying to understand, hey, who is this Eichler guy and what was the whole design philosophy? And when I came to understand that this guy was inspired by Frank Lloyd Wright and that he started thinking about building modernist homes as a business. And so he cared about making them affordable. He cared about making the business scalable. All of those things just made a lot of sense to me. These were not ostentatious museum pieces. These were functional homes to live in, but they were designed with that particular aesthetic that I came to really appreciate when I was over in Europe. So it was kind of like I missed Europe and I was saying, okay, I can have a little bit of Europe and minimalism here in the Bay Area.
Yes, it's fascinating that it's so available here. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people don't know the amount of mid-century modern homes, not just Eichlers. 2,700 Eichlers alone in Palo Alto, but there are so many homes. There's over 30,000 mid-century modern homes here on the peninsula.
That's incredible, really.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, there were all of these competitors that Eichler had. So many people have, I've been learning as well as we go along over the years. People have told me, oh, you know, there's a community in Westlake, there's a community in San Bruno, there are some mid-century modern homes in South San Francisco, so all over. So let's get into what to do with the Eichler and what not to do. A lot of people will ask, what type of flooring do you put into an Eichler? You have a beautiful flooring all throughout your Eichler. I always tell people I'm a huge fan of cork. I'm a huge fan of just brushed concrete. I'm a huge fan of the microtop that you've used. A lot of people want to put hardwood in their Eichler. I don't think that looks great, but they do. So to each their own, but can you explain to everyone what you did?
Sure. Well, again, so I've got two floors. I've got a ground floor and an upper floor. When I moved in, the ground floor had the living room area was carpeted, wall-to-wall carpeting, and the kitchen area was laminate. That was over, of course, just the slab. And I removed all of that. And what I wanted to do, given that there's, you know, this constrained amount of square footage, I wanted to make it feel like it was larger. So I knew I wanted a uniform flooring material across the entire ground floor.
Yes.
And when I started to think about that, I initially had just the kind of exposed concrete, which was kind of like patchy because there had been radiant heating leak repairs done. And I sat with that for about a year. And then I thought, no, since the rest of the house, all of the surfaces had been completely redone and they were kind of spotless, I thought, let's do something else. And so coming back to my military days, if something that looks like, for me, iconic is like a Marine Corps barracks that has this gray epoxy or an aircraft hangar that has this gray epoxy.
Yes.
And so that's what I did on the ground floor. I had the entire slab covered with this light gray epoxy. And instead of having it a very matte finish, which would camouflage dirt and dust a little more, I actually really liked that sheen, and so I got it kind of a glossy finish.
Yes.
And so I think that looks really cool. Of course, you have to keep it very clean, and I'm very happy to do that. And then with that tone, with that light gray tone, what I did to all the pavers and the decking around the pool and all the entranceways around the home, I had that exterior concrete stained roughly the same tone, so that it did add to that indoor-outdoor feel. Mm-hmm. And then on the upper floor, as I did my little amateur research on Eichlers, I did come to understand that cork flooring was used pretty often. And so I worked with the general contractor, Keycon. They're the group that did this whole remodel for me. We found a good vendor for cork, and I tried to find a cork kind of material that looked like what Eichler had used in the 60s. And so, the upper floor is cork, and then all three bathrooms have an identical kind of slate gray hexagon kind of tile. So it's repetitive again. So it isn't like the three bathrooms look completely different. They actually look, for better or worse, exactly the same in terms of the flooring material and the other finishes.
I think that's the way to do it. Less is definitely more. You want to make the space look open. You want all the flooring to have a cohesive look. And just what you're saying with even the kitchen and the bathrooms, I think having the same, you know, tile, the same color scheme, it really looks a lot better.
Agreed.
I also think that people should preserve the mahogany as much as possible. If it is not, if it's badly distressed, I like what you did was you just replaced it with different wall paneling. And I love that Keycon did that for you as well.
They did. And so, yeah, so when I moved into the home, the walls on the ground floor were just that standard kind of drywall with some texture on it. And so what we did was in the living room area, this was when Mad Men, the miniseries was out and everything was mahogany.
Yeah.
So that original home back when it was built in 74 did not have mahogany paneling. It had kind of this drywall. But we kind of retrofitted it with mahogany paneling. And Keycon did an amazing job of integrating that. So that the entire living room area has mahogany paneling. And then the kitchen is just white. And it makes sense in a kitchen area because there's a little less light coming into the kitchen than there is into the living room. So the fact that the mahogany darkens the room a bit is offset by the fact that there's a ton of light coming in.
Mm-hmm. Another thing that I love that you did not do, you did not paint the ceilings of your Eichler.
True.
I think that a lot of people ask, can we white out the ceilings? They're a little bit dark. I think that really changes the whole feel of the house. If you are going to paint them, if there was a lot of damage, again, I would do something that's really light and doesn't disrupt, you know, the color scheme.
And that's an interesting point you made. Again, these are just residences. These are not, it's not like the Guggenheim Museum or something, some huge structure. But of course, because this is my home, I feel the same way that anyone who has a home feels. Like we're, you know, very lucky, of course. But what I was, the point, the thing that I was always trying to do was to stay true to the Eichler basic themes, but sort of modernize. And this is a tricky thing to do. So for instance, on the ground floor, I took out the fireplace, and I thought about this for a while because fireplaces are kind of a standard feature in Eichlers. I took that out, and in that cutout space on the wall, I put this huge window in that overlooks the pool. And then also there was a wall that divided the living room from the kitchen, and it ran the entire span of the house. And I reduced that so that there's really this open plan feel flowing between the kitchen and the living room now, and there's very little interior walls. Actually, the only wall that's there is the one that, from an engineering standpoint, needed to be retained.
Which I think is smart because you opened up that whole space.
Yeah, and for like parties and all, it's it just feels great. I mean, people naturally flow around and congregate together. So I guess the other thing I forgot to mention that was added to the house is when I moved in, there was a garage, and the garage is integrated into the overall house structure. And back in like 2019, I was visiting another guy who's got an Eichler in Palo Alto, and he had converted his garage into an ADU, an accessory dwelling unit. And I thought, okay, that's interesting. And so around the pandemic, it became clear that it would be really nice to have a separate space or room. And so the garage on my Eichler's like 420, 430 square feet. And I thought, well, let's turn this into living space. And again, what Keycon did there was build out or renovate that space so that it looks like, and we took great care to try to make sure that it looked like it was part of the original home structure. Like it was always that utility or flex room. And there, the sidewalls of the garage were just standard wooden sidewalls. So what I wanted to do and was able to do is maximally cut out all of that wood sidewall and replace it with glaze and replace it with glass and sliding glass doors. And so it really looks like a glass cube. It looks like an artist studio. The flooring there is also the epoxy. The kitchenette is identical to the kitchen in terms of the cabinetry and the backsplash and the countertops and sinks. Everything is kind of identical, so it looks like it was part of the original space. And even on the exterior, if you're standing outside of that ADU slash garage looking at that space, we've inserted a beam going across, you know, those sort of white contrasting color beams that are held up by posts to make it look like, okay, yeah, this was part of the original design. So that again wasn't part of the original home, but I wanted to make it very much look that way.
Right. Well, you succeeded in that. And I love the feel of the house. You have a second story Eichler, which is very special. And I like how the contrast of the rooms, the color going up the stairs, everything is cohesive. So I kudos to you for doing that. For the light fixtures, I noticed you have all the original globe lights.
Yeah.
And there is a company called 360. I don't know who you used, but there's a company called 360. They have actually the best replica of the originals that I've
Interesting.
Seen.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Have they been around for a while or are they pretty
new? Been around for a while, okay. And you can actually find them on Amazon.
Okay.
For those of you listening.
Okay, good plug.
There's a little hack for
you. I'll plug. So the globe lighting in the house was retained from the original, fortunately. None of those broke. So those have been retained. And then everywhere else, again, I didn't want to have a bunch of standing lamps and clutter. I wanted to have wall lighting across the whole home. And so I think there are a total of, in the interior of the house, a total of 19 or 20 bow tie sconce lamps with perforated, siding. And those are from, here's the plug, I think it's called Practical Props.
Yeah,
okay.
Nice.
And so we've got like 19 or 20 of them inside. So all the bedrooms, the living room, the kitchen, those are all illuminated by these identical props. So it's all repetitive through the whole house. And then on the outdoor, the exterior lighting are also enlarged versions of those practical props. Light fixtures.
That's perfect. And the colors, didn't you mention, or maybe Tiffany or Ron mentioned that you had used the actual Eichler colors? There is a color scheme. And for those of you listening, if you want to email me, I can send you this color scheme, or I should just put it on, I'll put it on our website. Eichler had all of these color schemes mapped out for Eichler's.
That's right. And one of them, so I looked at my neighbor's homes, and most of the homes in my tract are earth tones. And but there is one green, and it's called Springfield Sage. That was in the initial color palette. So it was one of the eight that you could have chosen from. And so, yeah, I did ask Kikon to use that color for the exterior. And then the interior of the house is all... Every surface is white, like all the walls. And it's like some eggshell. I don't recall the exact shade. But So again, it's quite simplistic. It's not like, oh, here's the yellow room, here's the pink room.
Right.
It's like everything is white. And then if I ever left the home and someone else moved in and they had a different view on coloring, well, they could either paint it or just put things in that room that had those additional colors. But I really didn't want to get busy with any of the finishes, because again, you're not dealing with a 20,000 square foot home where that would look in place. I didn't want to try to jam all sorts of, small features, small angles, small colors or whatever. I just wanted everything just to be almost like a blank slate.
Yes. And it looks great. I think that's the key, is a blank slate, a blank canvas. And you don't have any art. It's this wonderful, calm, serene room of white and mahogany and glass. So you have that really, it's a very calm space to walk into. For the roof, I know you probably had issues, like all of us, with the roof. You cannot move into one of these homes without having some problems. How did you work? Keycon, I believe, worked on your roof as well. Or was it April?
Actually, I have, knock on wood, but I have not, in my particular case, I did not have any problems with the roof. Zero. And I think when I moved in 2015, I think the roof had been replaced some five-ish years prior to that. So maybe it's, you know, kind of coming due. But your point is true. I'm thinking of a couple neighbors of mine who, in particular, they have roll-o-matic roofs. And I was just talking to one. So that's a very interesting feature, this kind of retractable roof. It's kind of, it's sort of like in a big football stadium where part of the cover, the roof, will kind of on you know, powered rails, it'll kind of like open up, right? Let the sunlight in. And so some of these Eichlers have those. And I did talk to one of my neighbors recently, and they said what they need to do in their case, routinely they've got to go up there and clean leaves and twigs and stuff out of the rails that these rollers glide on. And then, you know, the leaks are, it's tough to keep that thing, it's tough to keep those roll-o-matics leak-free. And I guess there is one contractor in the Bay Area that specializes in this stuff. Because I think Roll-O-Matic as a company went out of business, but there's some contractor here that that still works. So if any comments come on your on your podcast about, hey, where is this contractor? I can track that down and give it to you.
Yeah. Well, I know Rick Abril, as we use Abril Roofing for our roof, and we've used them for so many listings. They are amazing. They have pinpointed problems for us and have been so reasonably priced. We've worked with some other groups that were, you know, charging so much money. It's very intimidating when someone says you have some roof issues, but Abril Roofing has been really amazing.
Where are they located?
They are here, actually.
Like
San Jose is where their office is, but they're always working here in Palo Alto, Portola Valley.
Cool. Okay, that is good to know. Yeah. Okay. So they're kind of like Eichler specialists.
Yes.
They kind of know the. Okay. Yeah. That's important, right? Vendors, their suppliers, whatever, who understand how these things, they understand the bones of these houses.
Right. Yeah. Right. And a lot of inspectors as well. Working with some inspectors, they will. You know, they can't even believe that someone would inhabit an Eichler. So they, you know, their reports are horrible. When you work with a specialist who knows Eichlers, they'll know, you know, this is what happens with the roof. Yeah. This is what these are. Mm-hmm. So it's important to have the right vendors that can fix issues.
Right.
So let's talk about furnishings for a little bit. I have some, I have three little Eames chairs for you downstairs. Now that I remember, we have a lot of staging that we're dispersing. So I have those for you if you like them. Can you share with us about the furnishings of your home?
Yes. And first of all, a couple points as a preamble. My home is very minimalistic, also furnishings wise. And the other point is I wanted to have a mid-century kind of look, but I wanted furniture that was more comfortable. And so by that, I mean, like if you look at a couch or a sofa that was made in 1962, the couch, the cushions are not very deep, like they're 18 or 20 inches deep, and it, the sort of the back is very straight, and they're kind of small. So I'm 6'4", and I like to just like drape around furniture, and I'm also a big value for money person, and so I looked at every vendor that had kind of quadratic, heavily upholstered, nice like rectilinear kind of modernist kind of furniture, and actually, believe it or not, this firm called Joybird. Had exactly the kind of stuff that I like. And so, and what I wanted to do as well on the color schemes, if you look at true mid-century, it's like burnt orange, mustard, kind of puke green or pea green. These are kind of like not really interesting. And so I diverged from that as well and wanted colors more that would pop, like kind of bright colors with a lot of life, Mm-hmm. I didn't want drab colors. And fortunately, Joybird has those sorts of colors. So in addition to that, I had this very large sectional sofa that I got in Germany when I was living there that's built like a tank. Mm-hmm. And I had that reupholstered and then recovered. So I've got these, you know, kind of like blues and orange and reds in the house that add some brightness and color. And I would say with Joybird furniture, since we're plugging that, I do think these, it's great. The only issue is...
Great price point.
It's a price point. The only issue was on this three cushion sofa that I have, the quality of the stuffing or foam or whatever it's called, mm-hmm, was not very good. And so I went to this place called Sterling Upholstery in Mountain View, and they're the same group that rebuilt my German sofa. And so Sterling also put much heavier, denser core foam into the seats on this Joybird sofa. So it's much more comfortable to sit on now. So none of my stuff, it's not like Versace couches or something. It's not like that. It's completely minimalistic. But again, when I have guests from Europe, when I have guests from Minnesota, which is where I'm from, when they come up and they're hanging out on those pieces of furniture in a mid-century house in California, they love it. And for me, that's what I really enjoy about it. Like having people feel super at home and super comfortable and saying, yeah, we don't see homes like this where we come from.
Right. I remember, you know, going to school on the East Coast and coming here and seeing these houses. It was a total shock to me. And we always know people that walk into an Eichler open house, their jaws just drop open. They're really either really excited or they don't like it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like you, when I first saw them, I felt like I landed on the moon.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it was crazy to me.
Yeah.
And it instantly felt like me. It felt like this is me.
Yeah, it says something about a person, doesn't it? The type of architecture that they like or don't. It says something about their personalities. Like, I think some people like very heavy, dark. It's sort of like if they want to feel very secure and safe and cozy, they want all that heaviness
walls
around
and walls
them.
Walls,
yeah.
And walls. I feel claustrophobic, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
In those homes. I mean, I appreciate all architecture. I just recently sold a Victorian in downtown Palo Alto. It was beautiful. I loved it. It was a great feel. It was a very charming house. But I choose to live in this type of architecture just because it makes me feel so good.
Yeah, yeah. Well, your home's absolutely beautiful. Yeah.
Oh, thanks, Matt.
For anyone, and for your listeners, it's kind of like, mm-hmm, like an Eichler on steroids. It's kind of more in that continuum between an Eichler on one end of the continuum and a Frank Lloyd Wright on the other. It's more towards Frank Lloyd Wright and also from a size point of view, obviously larger. But it's really a beautiful home.
Well, I before I was married, I lived in an Eichler, and so many people, a lot of people couldn't pronounce my last name, so one of the owners started calling me the Eichler lady, and I was using the Eichler lady all the time. And people said, you know, why don't you live in an Eichler? And I, you know, Peter and I are modernists. This home came up, and yes, it's not an Eichler, but this fits us so well.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, this is a very unique home. It's very clear that this is individually designed. It fits right into the slope of this ridge that you live on, and it's built to take full advantage of the view you've got, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, this gives you this sense of unending space in front of you.
Yeah. We've been friends for, I think it's been 8 years coming up here, and I love that people can become friends through this architecture. When I think you came to an Eichler talk I was giving, and we just recently had our Design Palo Alto event at your home, at your Eichler, and I just appreciate your care and your giving, your generosity to this community, and for letting us, you know, come and have that event at your home, and for all the years of friendship through this architecture too. It's been very cool sharing that with you.
Yes, I do recall it. Before I met you in person, I would see your ads in California Monthly, I think, magazine. And then when I saw you in person for the first time, I'm like, oh, yeah, she's that person.
That's so funny.
I also recall, like, when I was lucky enough to buy this home, the woman I purchased it from, I just told her, hey, look, this is a mid-century modern. That's what really appeals to me. And I'm glad that she felt comfortable enough to sell it to me, because she, I think, was hoping that I would be an asset, a contributor to the neighborhood, and a contributor to the home. And so I think that's part of it. Just, you know, I want to do my part for the Eichler or mid-century or California modernist community. I want to do my little, you know, in my little corner of it, I want to keep that, that kind of vibe alive.
Yes.
And so thank you very much for the friendship and for our talk today.
Yeah, thank you. I do want to touch on the community. Another thing that's so important about Eichlers and Eichler neighborhoods is the community that you have. In Palo Alto, you have a lot of neighbors that are original owners. You have been, you know, such a connector with them. And I love that you're in this place where you can help your neighbors and share that love of the architecture. How has that been?
Well, when I moved to Palo Alto at the end of 14 and moved into the house in 15, I did come out to California alone. So I'm one of these weird, eccentric people that still am not married. And I was actually hoping that I would become friends with my neighbors. And so I came out here to set up a company. And once a quarter, I would have the team from my company over. And I would also invite swimmers from the swim club that I belong to. I'd invite people from the military community that I had started, you know, plugged into when I got here. And of course, my neighbors. And so these quarterly parties, this is before COVID, turned out to be really nice, because it allowed my neighbors to just walk out the front door of their home, walk down 100 feet, and meet people from different walks of life from the area. And I liked being part of that, to help, you know, make those, or allow those connections to be made. And, you know, it takes time to, you know, to make real friends. And so I think of, you know, as I've gotten to know more people on my court or street, there's some that have emerged as, like, you know, very trusted friends. And so I feel good about that. And then for the broader Eichler community, I do think, because these are such specialized little gems or collectibles or whatever you might want to call them, it is always interesting when Eichler owners get together to talk about this kind of shared experience. It's very different than, there is really, I don't think, any other class or type of home that is so consistent across a large geography like the state of California. And for people then to meet in these neutral forums or whatever it is to chat about this, it's very cool. It is, because I do think all these people, anyone who owns an Eichler, most people who own it, they really care about it. It's kind of part of their life. It reflects kind of who they are a little bit. And so they like talking about it and listening to others talk about it. So, yeah, it's just a way to connect.
I think it's also a mission. When you become an owner of one of these homes, you're on a mission to fix it and to keep it alive and to help it. I didn't know how exhausting that was going to be. And we have about 4,500 square feet here. So I understand, I think we all understand, you know, working together to really keep this architecture alive.
Yeah,
that's part of the job of owning one.
And it is obviously, it's not cheap, right? And so you have to, for most people, you have to make it a priority. And also when you think about how to restore the home, you know, if you care about operating within a budget or something, It does help to think about simplicity. Like when you rebuild something, you could do it with a lot of complexity, you know, a lot of electronics, a lot of electromechanical stuff, a lot of whatever you could, but you're just inviting lots of ongoing maintenance as well. If you can have more simple assemblies or systems, it's just going to save you a lot of time and money going forward.
Right. We worked for years with a couple developers to try to build an Eichler tract ourselves here in the Bay Area. We had a lot of issues finding enough flat land. We also had issues with people believing in the Eichler architecture. Right. A lot of people said, do people really like these? Are these going to sell? Are they going to sell for top dollar? And they don't, you know, they still are not sold on that idea. It took me many years, and I finally just said, you know what, I'm going to focus on the brokerage and selling my own listings.
You know, that reminds me of something. Your quest to build from scratch new Eichlers based on the designs, the design documents that you've got, is a brilliant idea, and it reminds me of something. There's something similar. So in the Second World War, the United States had an aircraft called the P-51 Mustang. It was manufactured by a company called North American. And this was the premier World War II single-seat, single-engine fighter in the Second World War. And after the war, there were a lot of these things that were surplus to military requirements, and they made their way into private ownership. And these things are super fast, super maneuverable, and they're just iconic, right? It's like having a 65 Mustang. And so...
Are these, so they're smaller planes?
They are small. They're not easy to fly, but they are smaller planes. Mm-hmm. And but to make a long story short, the parallel is, I've often thought, wouldn't it be cool, since there should be demand for these planes, for someone to open up an assembly line in kind of a lower cost manufacturing place, build a couple thousand of these things, and hopefully sell them. But the question is, like, is there a market there for that? Like, how many people would actually buy? These things are very high performance, and therefore they're kind of hard to fly. The engines are so big and so powerful that makes them hard to kind of land and control, but they're great performers. And so I just wonder what the parallels are to these Eichler homes. Like, if a new buyer looks at buying a 2,000 square foot Eichler home or a 2,000 square foot like non-Eichler, like a Craftsman or something, like what is going on in their minds that would drive them to buy a Craftsman instead of an Eichler? Like,
right. Well, it's very different
yeah,
people.
Yeah,
they're
yeah,
very
I guess,
different
yeah,
backgrounds.
Yeah.
A lot of people here that work in tech that focus on design, they love Eichlers, they love mid-century modern architecture because they are focused on design.
Yeah.
Other
right.
people that I've noticed, in different professions prefer Craftsman style. They prefer more comfortable, cozy, just like what you were talking about before, more walls, more containment, more plush surroundings that we just do not have here.
Yeah.
We have stark surroundings. We do have a lot of open, beautiful glass, which shows us nature, but it's not the most comfortable house.
Right. Yeah.
It just isn't.
Yeah.
And people need to understand that to live in a work of art, you may be uncomfortable.
Yeah.
A little
right.
bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's not a house where you run in the front door and jump on the couch and pop the TV on. We are.
Yeah, it's true.
Sitting.
It's true. I guess I never quite thought about it that way, but yeah, you're right, yeah.
We are sitting looking at the view, or we're looking outside, or we're having, you know, a glass of wine or a glass of tea and talking. Mm-hmm. It's very different. So speaking of community, I met Herb, your neighbor, your amazing neighbor, who is an original owner, and I just fell in love with him. He's just the funniest, sweetest, and he knew Joe Eichler, didn't he?
Yes, he did interact with Joe. So yeah, Herb is, in my mind, an archetype or an archetypical Eichler owner. Herb bought his Eichler home in 1974 and specified the layout and type of home he wanted. And I think he actually has it's 2,500 square feet, which for an original Eichler it pushed the very limits. Herb was a satellite engineer. So he really was a cold warrior. He came from Brooklyn, New York, and moved out to the West Coast and eventually settled in Palo Alto and bought this Eichler. It was the second Eichler he had lived in. And so he did satellite engineering for a large number of years, like a lot of the people who came here and bought Eichler's, right? Like post-war baby boom, Cold War stuff. And Herb also is, there's a Jewish community around. So on in my tract, a number of the owners, including Herb, are Jewish, and they purchased those homes because it's close mm-hmm. proximity to a synagogue or temple around. Mm-hmm. And Herb was also very involved in partisan politics. So in addition to like being in the Eichler community, he was, you know, active in the Democratic Party for a number of years. So he's got a ton of stories. I kind of, when I talk to him, kind of quiz him on things that were happening kind of in the 1960s in this area, because it's kind of like living history. It's like pre-internet, right. Cold War, post-war boom, kind of. So like a very fascinating guy, yeah.
He's so great. He reminded me of all of these. I know so many people like him, and even meeting Ned Eichler when I used to go up and we were talking about the plans when I first was talking about acquiring them. Ned Eichler was just same way, just, you know, wanted these communities to work out. He put everything he had into the marketing department, mm-hmm. was working with people like Herb, and he just cared about their comfort.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for taking the time today. Thank you for sharing this love of Eichler's. Thank you for being a good example of what to do. Everybody should go over to Matt's house and take a look at what to do and what not to do.
Party at Matt's place next Friday night. Everyone's invited.
We'll meet you there.
Yeah.
Thank you, Matt.
Okay, thanks very much, Monique.
Thanks for tuning in to today's episode. I hope you had as much fun learning about the world of mid-century modernism as I did. You can also catch the show on my YouTube channel, where we walk through some of the most stylish mid-century modern homes in California. Just search for Mid-Century Modernism with Monique and hit subscribe. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast and leave me a comment to let me know what you think. Your feedback helps me make the show even better. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time on Mid-Century Modernism with Monique.